This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies. Your favorite rock band may be long gone or no longer up to snuff, but you might not be completely out of luck. There's still a chance you could see their hits performed live. All over the world, tribute bands are playing the hits of iconic groups and artists, including in San Antonio. There are at least a dozen local groups paying tribute to artists from Journey and Fleetwood Mac to Metallica, Kiss, and Iron Maiden, plus tribute acts from elsewhere gigging on a variety of San Antonio stages. Have you been to see a tribute show, whether local or touring? Was it an authentic experience? Do you think this kind of entertainment is cheesy, unnecessary, or maybe even offensive? This is a community conversation, and we want to hear from you. Call 210-614-8980. That's 210-614-8980. You can also email the Source at tpr.org or tweet at us at tprsource. We're going to kick things off today with Sanford Nowlin. He was the lead writer, but now, congratulations, editor-in-chief of the San Antonio Current. The headline of his recent article is "The Hit Parade: San Antonio's Tribute Bands Thrive as Audiences Look for Comfort in the Familiar." Welcome to The Source, Sanford.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, why tribute bands? What inspired you to zero in on these types of musicians, and what did you learn?
Yeah, this is an interesting phenomenon that's, I had just observed it growing and growing pretty much since the mid-2000s in San Antonio and other markets, and I kept wondering, at what point are we going to reach the saturation level, right? Because I was seeing not just the usual Led Zeppelin and Beatles tributes and those sorts of things, but tribute bands for the obscure hair metal band from the 80s, Dokken, who I could maybe name two songs by, right? I started seeing that, you know, we were having tribute bands that were doing Linkin Park, you know, a band that hadn't broken up that much, that long ago, and a tribute band that was doing the Foo Fighters, who still tour and still put out records. So I was thinking, you know, when are we going to reach the saturation point on this stuff? Are there too many of these? Why do they keep popping up?
Yeah. So what, in your research, have you been involved in the music scene for a while then, I would assume? Or is
this
new territory?
I've been a musician playing around San Antonio pretty much since the early 90s.
And is this a phenomenon you've noticed before? Is this sort of a new thing? Is it come and go?
I would say I started seeing it mid-2000s was when it was really popping up. And then on tour with one of my bands, we started noticing that even before we saw it reach a big level in San Antonio, we'd be in secondary markets, places like Rochester, New York, or Pittsburgh, or someplace like that, or Oklahoma City, and we'd pick up an alt weekly and thumb through, and there'd be a ton of tribute bands in there. And it makes sense, because, I mean, those are a lot of markets that get passed over by big tours, right? You know, and if you're in Rochester, New York, and you don't have a lot of money, you may not want to drive 7 hours to, you know, see the big touring act, AC/DC, or somebody like that when they're coming through. But if somebody's going to be playing at a bar and doing a pretty good job of it and charging $5, why not?
And so what venues in San Antonio specifically do you see these kind of shows at?
I mean, most of the tribute bands are playing decent-sized rock clubs, you know. But there are some tribute bands that can perform at the Tobin Center or the Aztec. Texas Pink Floyd, for example, had their debut gig at the Tobin Center.
And I saw, I think coming up next year, they're having the Beatles tribute, the Fab Four.
Yeah, and there's Rain, who are sort of at the top of the game in the Beatles tribute arena, and they, you know, dress in costumes and have an elaborate stage show and play, you know, the authentic Rickenbacker guitars and all that. So it's, you know, as close to seeing the Beatles probably as you could get. And, you know, they're playing places the size of the Majestic.
Wow.
Yeah.
So these bands can play for fun, but they can really make some money. They can sell some tickets as well.
Yeah, and I think there's a differentiator that allows bands to make the jump from being a local club band, which can be fairly lucrative, right, on a local level, to being the kind that can go out and tour regionally or even nationally. And one of them is to sort of adopt a stage show and a look the way Rain does, where they're dressing up like the Beatles and having costume changes to reflect the evolution of the Beatles style over time. You've also seen that with some of these bands that do Pink Floyd tributes and tour with big video screens and laser projections and smoke and all that kind of stuff. And if there's a visual spectacle to go with it, that can allow you to sort of amp it up and become a regional or national touring act. Or the other thing that we're seeing a lot of is people sort of incorporating, you know, actual musicians who are associated with the acts that they're doing tributes to. And an example of that would be the Experience Hendrix tour that came through here with one of Hendrix's actual sidemen in the Band of Gypsies, plus a lot of other star power like Buddy Guy and Johnny Lang and a bunch of other folks who were influenced by Hendrix and willing to be part of this package tour.
Lends some authenticity.
Yeah,
to
so
the
so yeah, and the Texas Pink Floyd, one of their angles, I guess, in terms of you know, getting out there and trying to tour nationally and regionally, is that they have two people that tour with them, a saxophone player and a vocalist, who actually had recorded with Pink Floyd. They were not among the four core members of Floyd, obviously, but people who had appeared on Floyd records.
Yeah. So also in the studio with us here is Nathan Alvarado. He is a San Antonio-based original musician and also a member of multiple tribute bands. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about your tribute bands. What all are you involved with?
The longest running tribute band, I guess, is Third Eye. It's a Tool tribute and a Perfect Circle tribute. I also have S.A. Woman, The Doors tribute band. We started Like Grenades, Incubus tribute band. I sing for Eddie and the Valiants, which is a tribute to like San Antonio garage bands in the late 60s. So I have a variety of those things that are always kind of thinking of new ideas, new projects to do over the years, but Third Eye's the longest running since 2007.
And how often are you performing with each of these bands? It seems like a lot on your plate.
Yeah, and that's why I can space them out, because, you know, with tribute bands, you know, we don't want to oversaturate the market either. So, you know, we space them out usually once a month.
Okay.
You know, so, and we kind of combine them sometimes. We'll do, you know, the Doors might open for the Tool band, or Incubus might open up for something else. So, you know, we kind of mix and match and to space out the shows, you know, so we can make each one memorable and not play it every week or anything like that.
Are you usually playing on a bill like by yourself or with other tribute bands?
With Third Eye, primarily by ourselves. It just depends. Just logistically, it's always easier if you can do a whole night by yourself. You know, it's easier for logistics, and as far as business-wise, it makes more sense if you can cover a whole night with a band like Tool. Their depth of the catalog, you know, you can play 3 hours and no one's going to complain. And plus, with a Perfect Circle, we can open for Tool. For those who don't know, it's the same vocalist, Maynard James Keenan, fronts both bands, so it's like an easy
2-for-1,
obvious mesh of Maynard fans can get. Yeah, 2-for-1 right there.
And so why these bands?
Well, for me and the founding member of Third Eye, our bass player Steve Coronado, that's our favorite band of all time. You know, our generation, that was the biggest band growing up in the 90s. So that was just our mutual love, our mutual favorite was the band Tool. The challenge of the music, you know, the dynamics of the music, again, their rich catalog, and just that was our favorite stuff to play. So it seemed like that's what we should, you know, dive into.
Okay, and we'll talk more about that when we come back from this break. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies, and we're talking about tribute bands today. Have you ever been to see a tribute show or played in a tribute band? We want to know how that experience was for you. And before we go to break, we are going to hear some of a band from San Antonio called S.A. Lights, San Antonio Lights. They are a Journey tribute band. This is The Source. We'll be right back. That's Bricks in the Wall, a Pink Floyd tribute band out of Dallas. And today we are talking about tribute bands on The Source. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies. For San Antonio's music scene, tribute shows are big business. Do you think they have staying power? What makes a good tribute band? What famous rock group would you like to see a band pay homage to? We're talking about tribute bands, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And Bernard is on the line. Welcome to The Source, Bernard. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. I'm excited about this show, mainly because I'm a devout metalhead, and I have no shame in that whatsoever. I see the big acts when they come through town or when they're close to town every chance that I get. In the meantime, there are several excellent bands here in town that are worth going, the price of admission every time they come to play. I've seen Third Eye a couple of times. Great band. Even though they're not particularly my genre or era of music, they're excellent, excellent musicians. I think that San Antonio is re-embracing its roots as Metal City USA to a degree through the homage that these bands are paying to the artists that they're looking to respect. And that's the one thing that I always look for when I go see a band, is how much are they going to respect the music and its roots. Third Eye does a great job of that. Just to name a few off the top of my head, Seventh Son, tribute to Iron Maiden. There's Oz out of Dallas, who tribute to Ozzy, Back in Black, straight out of Dallas for AC/DC. And there's a couple more. There's one called Violent Revenge that is not as active as it used to be, but excellent musicianship throughout.
Awesome. Bernard, thank you so much for that call. He named a lot of the ones that I have this giant list over here, and we'll hear some from Seventh Son later, San Antonio's Iron Maiden tribute. Let's bring in John Kovach. He's a professor of music theory and director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. He also plays in a Yes tribute band. Welcome to the show, John.
My pleasure.
So we were talking earlier about how tribute bands are big business. Why is that?
Well, I think people love to hear music they already know. Most musicians, I think probably Sanford and Nathan can reinforce me here, that people like to hear things that they already know, and it's very difficult to get them to go for things they haven't heard before. You know, indie bands try to do it, and they have some success, but people like the familiar music, especially as they get older. You know, listening to the guys talk a little bit and thinking of it from a position as a scholar, I would say probably when it comes to tribute bands, you can think of a continuum that ranges from repertory being the important thing on one side and celebrity being the important thing on the other. So on the repertory side, these are the bands that don't dress up, they don't put on the same show, they just do the music as faithfully as they can, maybe allowing themselves certain liberties in interpretation. And then on the far side, the celebrity side, that's where you want to look just like the performer. You want to reproduce as much as possible the original experience. And if you can throw in some star performers along the way who weren't originally in the group or who were peripherally part of the group, that's fine. And, you know, tribute groups can choose their place along that continuum, from just focusing mostly on the music to focusing mostly on the show to some blend of it in between. And I think fans, you know, will gravitate toward those shows that give them the most of whatever of those elements they're interested in.
Sanford, in your article, you did mention that tribute bands are often met with antipathy from purists, as you call them.
Right.
Why is that?
Yeah, especially when we first started seeing this rush of tribute bands here in town, I would talk to original musicians who would sort of look down their nose and say, oh, you know, these guys are hacks, or, you know, why is it they're drawing 150 people to a club show playing music everybody's heard before, and when I, you know, want to do my original music I've worked really hard on, I can only get 5 or 6 people out. And I think there's a certain element to of thinking, you know, why is it that we can get all these folks out to see something recreated, something that's already existed, as opposed to wanting to get in on the ground floor of something new and fresh and innovative? And I think the reality is, you know, the people that want to get in on the ground floor for an original band and see stuff and take a chance on it, that's a pretty small percentage of the population, really. You know, it's diehard music fans who are willing to take risks, who are willing to go out and see music a lot of nights out of the year and, you know, roll the dice. And sometimes you're going to see something you like. Sometimes you're going to see something that's not appealing. But I think for casual music fans, seeing a tribute band, you know, if you're going to drop $7 or $8 on cover for yourself and your date, and then another $20-$30 on a bar tab, right? I mean, you may want to see something you know you're going to enjoy. And if you like Iron Maiden, Seventh Son is going to deliver a really good Iron Maiden show.
Let's hear this clip. This is from a tribute documentary, the Police tribute band documentary, The Next Best Sting, which I love. This is a clip from Mike Neeland, a member of a Police tribute band.
Tribute thing first started coming around, I thought it was dumb. But this time I was in an original band, and I was all about creating art and the dream that, you know, we're all creating art, and then everybody's obligated to listen to our stuff because it's so good. So you're a sellout if you do it. You know, you're going to play music to make money.
And then this is another quote from that same documentary. This is Larry LeBlanc from Billboard magazine.
The attraction for a tribute band is really easy. You get paid because you play in a club on your own. You're not going to make that much money, but you play as part of a tribute band. You know, you can do very, very well.
So Nathan Alvarado, you are a member of multiple tribute bands, but also an original band, Remnon.
Correct.
Can you respond to those clips?
Yeah, those are interesting clips. I'm glad you found those. And first, let me thank Bernard real fast for calling in. Thanks for being a Third Eye fan and a Tool fan, obviously. So yeah, those clips, they illustrate very well, I guess, what it's like to be in a tribute band. And I talked to some other tribute band members, musicians, friends, many of which also have original music bands this past weekend. And they, one of the first comments when I told them I was going on the show and asked them, you know, what is your thoughts on why do we do this, you know? And a lot of them, you know, say it's nice to get paid to play music. And the one thing a musician wants to do is perform. You know, I'm a vocalist. I want to sing for people. You know, people want to play. And even if they still have their original music, it's nice to know that I can book a date with my tribute band on a weekend, have a crowd there, have fun, enjoy the music, and walk away with a little bit of cash, you know, to help
pay
the bills.
Hector Saldana with the Express News wrote an article, I think it was last year, about how original musicians pick up side gigs sort of with tribute bands, but often to fund their original projects, you know, make some money.
In talking to the guitar player from Seventh Son, I mean, he's in another band called Eternal Requiem, who are an excellent power metal band, who are going to be going over to Finland to record with one of the better-known metal producers in Europe. And his take on it was, look, to fund my original band, I can either work at a gas station, you know, and hate myself, or I can I can be on stage playing Iron Maiden covers, which I really like doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty easy choice, I think.
Makes sense, yeah. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980, and Becky is on the line. Becky, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I wanted to call in to tell you that I am a fan of tribute bands here in San Antonio, as well as I'm a part of one called Dream Warriors, which is a tribute to Dawkins.
Hey, how are you?
Hey.
I know you.
Hello, Bex.
Yeah, and I'm also, you know, I'm a huge fan of Sanford as a musician as well, and Nathan. They are you know, great comrades. But I did want to just give some input as to why I think that people go to see the shows. You know, they're looking to see real musicianship. Right, that they just don't get in even today's rock. There's maybe a few bands that have come out through, you know, big record companies, but they just sound so overproduced, not enough sweat, not enough musicianship, you know, that you can get from going out to see your favorite tribute band today.
Thank you so much for that call, Becky. I really appreciate it. And she mentioned that, you know, that was one of the reasons that I read that people go to support tribute bands is just a rejection of today's music. How do you feel about that, Sanford?
I don't know that it's a rejection necessarily. I mean, I think for some people it is. But the reality is, especially for rock fans, there's not an apparatus that's sort of creating rock stars anymore, right? MTV doesn't play music videos. The radio's not playing original rock music. There's, you know, the coverage it gets is pretty minimal compared to the coverage that boy bands and K-pop and hip-hop and all this other stuff that appeals to a younger audience is getting. So I think there's a desire among a lot of rock fans to sort of see something, you know, a big act that can kind of get them all together and get them excited again. And when you look at these tribute bands, very often they're organized around what I would call a big tent act, a Zeppelin, a Beatles, a Tool, Radiohead, Pink Floyd, you know, these bands that folks who like a lot of different sort of sub-genres of rock can all get together and kind of get behind. And I think if you're going out and seeing original live music, rock music has gotten so stratified, you know, that we're not just talking about bands doing sub-genres of rock now, but sub-sub-sub-genres
very meta,
of rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's just not for everybody. And oftentimes that means you're going to be stuck with an audience of, you know, 10 or 12 or 20 people.
John, can you tell me about the genesis of the tribute concept? When did it first start? Can you track down to the first tribute band ever?
Well, gosh, I mean, it seems like there have been Elvis impersonators since I was in high school, and I turned 60 this year. So I think there have been people. There's that. There was that Broadway show, Beatlemania?
Beatlemania.
You know the one? Yeah. And, you know, that was the first one that really made an impression on me of trying to sort of dress up like a band and reproduce with the instruments and all the kind of tribute band kind of thing. But I think really what happens is sometime in the 80s into the 90s, as labels are busy trying to make us buy CDs of recordings we already own on vinyl, there's a kind of historicization and a construction of rock's history and rock's past that tends to canonize certain groups from the past. And if you look at the mid-90s, that multi-episode PBS series was released then, so was the Time Warner series, a 10-episode series. The Beatles anthology was released at about the same time. And so then you get this kind of rise of a kind of historical awareness, and hey, that old music was pretty good. And it's natural that musicians would capitalize on that. Well, I've always loved that music. Why don't we do a band that does that? You do one show, people show up, they think, well, this is great. We got quite a crowd. Maybe we could do this again. And before you know it, that starts happening all across the country with different kinds of groups. And it develops into a scene where now club owners are looking for those kinds of groups because it gets people in the door and it sells drinks and all the rest. And, well, that's how the thing builds up. So I would take it back at least to the mid-90s, maybe before.
Yeah, because younger generations might have, you know, a classic band like Led Zeppelin's entire discography on vinyl or whatever, and you can listen to it whenever you want, but you're never going to have that, you know, live experience like you were actually seeing them and experiencing it. But anyway, let's go back to the phones. Jose, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. My family and I enjoy tribute bands going out to support the local clubs only because it's inexpensive entertainment. And many of these big name bands, if and when they do come to San Antonio, it's either pay $10 or $20 for a tribute band, or $200, $300, $400, $500, $600 for the name band. Also, take for instance the Doors. We will never be able to see them live, given two of the three members are already passed on. So we enjoy that entertainment. And as a musician myself, the authenticity, I get to gauge how note for note they're playing their music.
Very cool. Thank you, Jose. And your Doors tribute, Nathan, I look forward to seeing that because it's fairly new, yeah?
It is, yeah. My bass player, Steve, and I wanted to do that for years. Right after we started Third Eye, we've also loved the Doors, and the Doors obviously even more classic, and you're right, you can't see a Doors show ever again. So we've been waiting years to put it together. When you finally have the right keyboard player, Daniel Elliott, that came on board as a Third Eye member. So now we saw the possibilities that we can finally do our Doors tribute that we've been wanting to do. So it's called S.A. Woman. And December 8th is the next show.
Very cool.
At Sam's Burger Joint.
Jim Morrison's got to be quite a character to try to impersonate on stage. But we are talking about tribute bands. If you're just joining us today on The Source, I'm Kim Johnson. I'm sitting in for David Martin Davies today. And before we go to break, if you want to give us a call, we might have a few phone lines open for you. 210-614-8980. We'll get some of these callers on the air after the break. We're going to go out with a song from a Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks tribute here from San Antonio called Nightbird. This is The Source. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies. You were just hearing Seventh Son, a San Antonio Iron Maiden tribute band. And we are talking about tribute bands today. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. If imitation is the highest form of flattery, you won't find much higher praise than that coming from bands paying tribute to their musical icons. What inspires them to do it? to put in all that time recreating another band's sound and style, even dressing up to look like the original members. San Antonio is ripe with tribute bands, and we want to hear, what are your favorite experiences seeing a tribute band? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Would you do it again? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. This is Rolly. Rolly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to call in and talk about Third Eye, how Nathan and the band are spot on with the music. Nathan with his vocals and mannerisms of Maynard James Keenan are spot on. And, you know, I'm a huge Maynard fan, so I go to every show I can. And I always leave wanting more and more, and I can never get enough of Maynard. So with Third Eye, they help pacify the hungry for the Tool and Perfect Circle Maynard James Keenan experience.
Very cool, Rolly. Thank you so much for that call. Let's go straight over to Nick for a different perspective. Nick, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I just wanted to talk about tribute bands and how I think it's like a general degradation and atrophy of modern-day music and the modern-day music scene, especially here in San Antonio. The fact that people pay more for tribute bands, you know, from the past, it's nostalgia. And to me, it shows a profound inflexibility in the minds of music lovers everywhere. It used to be you could, you know, start a band in a garage with your buds and do really well. You know, you would have bad equipment, and you could do well. It's kind of like the death of the rock and roll dream to me. And nothing against tribute bands. I've gone to see tribute bands. I like tribute bands. But I feel like the saturation has gotten to a point where it really, really is impacting that young group of kids who are making music, you know, making music. And you can't really make a living, you know, you can't really get out there today. And it's sad. I think it's sad.
Thank you for the call, Nick. I'm going to go over to John Kovach. He is a professor of music theory at the University of Rochester. Can you respond to Nick's comments? Is this sentiment a common thing?
Well, I have to say that let's just look outside the world of rock music for a minute. I mean, take the world of classical music, for example. You know, if you're a 21st century composer writing new music, boy, that's as tough as being in an indie band with six people and their girlfriends at a club somewhere. I mean, it's very, very tough to get performances of that, but the big orchestras are still doing the music of Beethoven and Mozart and Brahms. So the argument that new music is being sort of pushed out by music that's 100 years old or 200 years old in some cases is kind of a familiar one if you know the world of classical music in the United States since the 1930s or 40s. It's just now that we have enough repertory, or in the last 20 years or so, enough repertory in popular music that people actually prefer other music to music that they hear being made today. Or maybe they like both of them at the same time. Who knows? But it seems to me like it's a bigger question than what happens just within a certain generation and their rock and roll.
In addition to playing the music, there are groups that go that extra mile to emulate the vocal styles and the appearance of the group. Sanford, how often do you see bands go all the way with their imitations in San Antonio?
Well, I was looking for bands that went all the way in San Antonio, and what I saw more often was bands like Nathan's, where he would sort of adopt the mannerisms of the front man. Maynard James Keenan, you know, sort of has this thing where he lurks in the shadows and whatnot,
yeah.
Right? And there's a difference between emulating the sort of the essence of the front man versus dressing up like the front man all the time, or having the entire band dress up like Led Zeppelin, or, you know, put on Beatle wigs. I haven't seen a whole lot of that here. It's more common that you'd see a band like Riff Raff, who's an AC/DC tribute band fronted by a woman, which is kind of cool. But it's more common than you would see, you know, a band like that have one guy who dresses up like Angus Young with the, you know, the shorts and the schoolboy outfit and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point that you mentioned, that, you know, tribute bands can cross genre and gender. So that's a really cool
Definitely.
Aspect. Let's hear a clip. This is from a Queen tribute band documentary, Keeping the Spirit of Freddie Mercury Alive. This is Peter Freestone, his assistant.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. He'd have to be proud.
If anybody should know, it's Peter Freestone. He was Freddie's live-in personal assistant. Peter has a warning for Freddie wannabes. You have to do the whole package. The look, the sound, and the moves.
Don't try and call yourself a tribute band then, because you're not paying tribute to them. You have to make the effort. You have to work at it.
Nathan, in your bands, what was behind the decision-making to try to look, be a look-alike band as well, or not?
Yeah, well, Third Eye, again, I'm really the only one that kind of tries to adopt, as Sanford mentioned, the mannerisms, the essence of Maynard, the way he used to dress, you know, weird, just cross-dressing and face painting, all sorts of different things. That's fun to play with because I can do different things and really, without trying to replicate an exact outfit he wore or, you know, buy his robot suit or anything like that. It's just to, as the clip mentioned, you want to give the audience some sort of show. I don't want to just dress up in my khakis and my polo shirt and go out there and just sing Tool songs, you know. So it helps me get into character, and I think it helps me perform better. And, you know, I guess when I tried doing it early on in my first shows with Third Eye, the crowd responded well. People wanted to take pictures and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, it struck a chord, so I kept doing it, and it's just part of what I do now.
I feel like some bands sort of obligate, like, how are you going to have a Kiss tribute band and not dress
exactly.
up like Kiss?
And yeah. Those guys do dress up, the ones that have, everyone I've seen performing, they go all out. You
fully
know,
commit
with
to
the
it.
Well, platform shoes and everything.
Yeah. And I think part of it, too, has to do with sort of how iconic the image is
exactly.
of the band. For example, you know, Led Zeppelin, sort of a larger-than-life look around that band with Jimmy Page's dragon suit and, you know, Robert Plant sort of almost androgyny and that sort of thing. And I think if folks are going to see a Zeppelin tribute, they're going to expect to have to see those cues on stage.
Very interesting. Let's go back to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. This is Cynthia. Cynthia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Back in 1966, I attended a Beatles concert in Detroit. And you couldn't hear them. They had these teeny, teeny, tiny amplifiers. And over the screams, they had to scream, you know, they had to scream to be heard. And, I mean, the thrill was just being in the same room as them. But you couldn't hear a thing. Well, in 2000, and I believe it was 2 or 2003, I went to the Majestic Theater here in San Antonio and watched a tribute band. And finally, I was able to hear the music just as it was recorded. And this is what's nice about a lot of the tribute bands is they stay true to the original music. They don't deviate. As, you know, sometimes original bands, they get tired of playing the same song and they deviate from the original recording.
Cynthia, thank you so much for calling in. She makes it's a great story being able to see the original and then, you know, continue to celebrate their music live. But there's a difference in, you know, some bands try to replicate an exact sound and others sort of introduce a twist on the original act. Some that immediately come to mind are like the reggae versions of, you know, Dread Zeppelin and Radio Dread. And another one is a band called Brownout. They are from Austin, and they do a really interesting take on Black Sabbath. And we have a clip of that. Let's hear it.
Now you wait your turn. You know there's no return.
And I think it's really cool when bands do that. I mean, there is, an allure to seeing the actual music, but then these are also taking creative license, Sanford.
Yeah, I think these are people who are sort of viewing the tribute band thing as almost like performance art. They're sort of making a political statement of sorts. I mean, in the case of Brownout, they're sort of, you know, putting this Chicano twist on Black Sabbath, much in the way Elvis, the Mexican Elvis, does with Elvis. And there have been a ton of sort of gender-bending tribute bands that, you know, where you have women playing these sort of, you know, often it's metal, too, and mm-hmm. they're doing this sort of hyper-masculine presentation while being women. And I think that works really well. I mean, there's AC/DC and Hell's Bells that do the AC/DC thing. There's Iron Maidens, right, mm-hmm. and Les Zeppelin, which is really fun. To me, the Zeppelin thing is very playful, too, because, I mean, this is a band that sort of was presenting itself as sort of the ultimate in early 70s hippie machismo, but at the same time had this very sort of homoerotic element going on. The Jimmy Page's long curly locks and prancing around in his dragon suit and Robert Plant's the way he would tie his shirt up in the middle, and I mean it's interesting stuff, and I think we're going to probably see more of that as people sort of take this trope, because tribute bands are riffing on a trope and now they become a trope, and I think we're going to see more people try to play with that and kind of say some interesting things politically.
Very cool. We have one more break to take. I'm Kim Johnson. I'm in for David Martin Davies today. We're talking about tribute bands. And on our way out today, right now to this break, we're going to hear some Led Zeppelin. It's a tribute by a San Antonio band called Mothership. We have a 1 minute break. We'll be right back. I'll take your calls back to back. This is The Source. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson, and for David Martin Davies, that is Bitty Bitty Banda, an Austin Selena tribute band. We're talking about tribute bands today on The Source. Are they glorified performance artists riding the wave of another person's success, or talented musicians consciously preserving the repertoire of iconic entertainers, or both? We're talking about tribute bands today. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. This is Carol. Carol, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, I appreciate what y'all are trying to do and everything, by putting this out there. And someone had alerted me that you were doing this. I started doing this about 4 years ago, and I represent Judas Priest Text, which is a Judas Priest tribute band, which is obviously heavy metal. And I'm a female doing it, and I was one of the first ones that started doing the female-fronted version of, a metal tribute. And, I'm up there with all the leather, the studs, the whips, the glasses, the look. And I try to personify some of what, their singer does, but also something that's, still me. But as far as the music goes, we rehearse it and have to have it exactly. Because if you're a fan and you come and hear a song that you've heard for years and years and it's not exact, it's like you get called out on it. So you don't want to deviate.
That's a great point, Carol. Thank you for your call. Let's go straight ahead to Derek. Derek, this is The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, Kim Sanford. How y'all doing?
All right. How are you?
Doing all right. Yeah, I'm calling on behalf of Texas Pink Floyd, a local San Antonio startup, which we just performed on November 4th, which kind of, I believe, answers y'all's question. I believe the ultimate answer is, what is a tribute band? Define tribute. You're supposed to be honoring something that made you believe, right? From what Adrian Armida's, the leader of Pink Floyd, Dexter Haskins, Glenn Mead, coming up from Austin, Brian, we have Matt, we have a lot of locals that came together, but yet we were one of the very few tribute bands who reunited Scott Page and Michonne Taylor.
Very cool, Derek. Thank you so much for your call. I'm going to go over to John Kovach, professor of music theory and director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. He also plays in a Yes tribute band. I wanted to ask, how does all this work legally? Did tribute bands need to get permission of any kind from the original artist?
No, because the clubs buy licenses from ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC in order to be able to play licensed music in their club. So, and the venues own the license. It all falls under the licensing that's already there. Any cover band, any group that's doing somebody else's music, it's not a problem.
I read about two different situations. One was a band called Beatallica, Beatles songs in a Metallica style. And Sony Entertainment threatened to sue them over the rights, but actually Lars Ulrich like stepped up and helped them win that battle. And then also Jon Bon Jovi sued LA-based tribute Blonde Jovi for copyright infringement in 2009. So it's not always black and white like that, is it, John?
Well, I mean, in this country, anybody can sue anybody. And the thing is, these publishers have a lot more money and attorneys than most musicians, who probably have zero attorneys. And so somebody could threaten to sue you. They haven't got to take you to court for very long before you say, okay, I quit. I give. Uncle. You know? I'd be more impressed if they had a positive decision, court decision, in their favor, than the fact that they just, stoked up their lawyers and went after some poor musicians.
Yeah. let's pivot over to the names of the bands, because we've mentioned a lot of them today. They sometimes have puns, sometimes reference a song or an album. Sanford, did you, in your experience, is that the case for most of these bands?
Yeah. I think that sometimes you can be a little too clever and name it after something too obscure, but... for the most part, it's sort of riffing, pardon the pun, on an album name or a song name by the band, or sort of twisting the band's name so it involves your hometown the way S.A. Woman does.
Yeah, I thought that was particularly
trying to find one.
Cute.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to, talking about saturation. You know, nationally, if you go online and look at Doors tribute bands, you'll see everything is taken, every name's taken. And these days, having to do everything promotional wise on the web, you'd want something original. So everything you could think of involving the Doors was taken. Album names, phrases, Morrison, you know, everything was taken.
So you really had to work for this one.
Yeah. We went for a long time, my bass player and I, Steve, and finally just, you know, like Sanford alluded to, just incorporate the town, you know. Thankfully, L.A. Woman sounds like S.A. Woman. So
yeah, and we
saw good brainstorming. Yeah. The
Texas Pink Floyd or Judas Priest Tex,
exactly.
A lot of the Texas.
Can I make one more comment real quick?
Going back to
Nick, who called earlier, and he brought up the struggle of young musicians making original music. And I just want to say, you know, from our perspective, from Third Eye, we do not consider ourselves replacement at all for original music in San Antonio. We are just another avenue to entertain people who like live music.
Filling a different need.
Yeah, so by all means, to us, it's not a replacement of the original music scene. Go down and go see Remenon, look up Boxcar Satan, you know, go to the strip and find new music, please. We're just another avenue to entertain people who want to go see the concert.
Yeah, it's not an either-or proposition. And in fact, I think, you know, one of the things I noticed in interviewing a lot of these tribute bands is a ton of them are staffed by people who play original music in other acts. So it's not like you're taking money away from an original act if you go see this. And I think a lot of younger people who go out regularly are probably still supporting original acts. It's just, you know, I think oftentimes as folks get older, they may drift into the familiar again when they start going out.
And Nathan, earlier during a break, you mentioned the generational thing. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I think it just makes sense. And John talked about earlier as well. It's just as you get older, you know, you get families, you get kids, you have your jobs. You don't have the freedom to go out multiple times a month and go explore, you know, the local music scene. So, like, you get that one date night with your honey and you want to go. You're both, you know, Pink Floyd fans. You're both Tool fans, whatever it is, your favorite band, System of a Down. You're like, let's go check them out at Fitzgerald's. You know, that's our date night. So $5 cover, $10 cover, and it just makes perfect sense. So as you get older, you want to just refamiliarize yourself or be communal. Get a communal experience with people who love the same band you do, and you're not going to spend that night experimenting or trying to find what might be good out there that you're not familiar with. So,
cool. Let's go to another caller. This is Taylor. Taylor, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. So I'm in San Antonio, and whenever I first started my Incubus tribute band, it was for the reason that they provided paying gigs. That puts food on the table. And for me, it wasn't exactly about respecting the artist, even though, like, they make good music, but it's not my favorite band, to be honest. And I did it because it was a paying gig. And to add to what the previous caller said was that I also had original projects going on simultaneously, and I could depend on paying gigs when I was playing tribute band shows.
Yeah, thank you so much, Taylor. You also have an Incubus tribute band, right, Nathan?
Yeah, Like Grenades.
Okay, and how long has that been around?
I want to say... 8 or 9 years. It was shortly after I started Third Eye. A lot of the same members pretty much are in Like Grenades as well. We augment it with the DJ and keyboard player. And again, a lot of these projects, you know, we won't play them for a year or we won't play them for 6 months, but we just kind of keep the name there. We want to bring one back. We're going to play one in January. So, again, it just keeps it interesting for us and keeps it fresh.
Okay. Let's get one last caller on the air. This is Chip. Chip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My comment is this. I've lived in San Antonio my entire life. I've been trying to consume local music since the mid-70s, and I have seen so many original bands, original scenes planted, flower, and then die because there's not another set of places for them to go. I mean, you talk about being in a club with, you know, your band and your band's girlfriends, but then where's the 100-seat auditorium? Where's the 150-seat auditorium? Where's the next venue to produce your original music? And I can understand why, you know, people want to put food on the table and do tribute shows, but I think there's been a real vacuum as far as original San Antonio sound is.
Thank you so much, Chip, for that call. Sorry to cut you off, but we're running out of time. Sanford, can you respond to that?
Yeah, I think he's correct to some degree that there may be, because it sounded like he was suggesting that perhaps there was competition mm-hmm. in terms of places for bands, original bands to play. And I do think if you end up with clubs that are seeing dollar signs with tribute bands and they're sort of pushing the original artists to the side, marginalizing them because, you know, it's a roll of the dice whether they're going to bring people in. But they know if a tribute band can get, you know, 50 to 100 people, they're going to go with a tribute band. So, yeah, I do see his point there. I'm not sure we're at that juncture in time yet where tribute bands are sort of forcing original acts to, you know, play on the sidewalk.
Though. You think we have enough venues to accommodate both?
I think we do. I mean, my experience in San Antonio has been that we have more venues now than I can remember it at any other time, especially mid-size and sort of theater-size venues that were really kind of the gap that we had that a lot of other cities had filled, you know.
Yeah. A lot of venues now are doing both. They'll do a tribute night on a Friday, original music on Saturday, or mix it up throughout the week. So there are plenty of venues where a 100 draw band could play, I think, in San Antonio.
And I've seen Bonds 007 and some other places. I've seen tribute bands playing with original bands, which could be a boon for both of them.
You know? Two things can exist simultaneously.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. This was Sanford Nowlin. He's editor-in-chief for the San Antonio Current. He has a piece online. You can check it out, The Hit Parade, San Antonio's Tribute Bands Thrive as Audiences Look for Comfort in the Familiar. Also, Nathan Alvarado is here, San Antonio-based musician. And on the line, we had John Kovach, professor of music theory at the University of Rochester and member of a Yes tribute band. This is The Source. I'm Kim Johnson, in for David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.